Okay, hello there, everyone. Welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Wesley Salmon.
Nothing to add?
No, that's it. They all know me by now. Peter Salmon.
It's just, you know, you normally you have like a longer sort of like, you just, you know, you... Give greetings to everyone.
I've said
here.
It all. It's okay. All been said. They've heard it all. Okay. No, I guess I'll give some usual rep for the old Ottawa. Good old OT.
I mean, if it's all been said, we do have another 59 minutes and 15 seconds to fill here. So
then let's get going.
Okay. All right. I just you just said it was all said. It all been said. But okay. let's get into the show. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We're here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new romantic sports drama Challengers, which you can now see at a theater near you. When you go to the theater and you hear the pounding techno house music, you know that Challengers is in session. I think that's safe to say.
Oh yeah, the music of that nature was definitely consistent. Yeah,
it was intense. Speaking of intense, we're going to air here on May Day, May 1st, and that means this Friday, summer movie season officially begins. And usually it's the biggest moneymaker for Hollywood studios every year. It's when they release most of their biggest of big blockbusters. And this year, though, there is kind of a change of pace because of the two strikes last year. There was a real shakeup in terms of what was going to be available this summer. For instance, this weekend is the first time since, I think, 2006, not counting the pandemic years of 2020 and 2021, the first time since 2006 where a Marvel movie did not start the summer movie season on the first weekend in May.
I didn't even think about that, but you're correct. I also heard the other day a bunch of the Sony ones, like Kraven the Hunter, have been like pushed by another year as well. So just superhero films all around really going to be absent this summer.
Yes, we are getting a Marvel movie later this summer in July, and they had a big trailer release for it this past week. I don't know if it's on Peter's list, and he doesn't know if it's on mine, so maybe we'll get into that later. But things are not going to be completely superhero-less, but it is going to be an interesting summer, to especially judging from last year, where the big hits of the summer were Barbie and Oppenheimer. What does summer look like when we don't have superheroes to race out and see, or I don't know, pan like talk derisively about our about going to the theater to see another strong man in spandex? I don't know. We'll have to see. Also, you know, not many in the way of franchises this summer. There are some movies that do count as like sort of franchises. It's kind of like brand names, but it's not like Marvel, Star Wars, DC, Harry Potter. It's like Mad Max and the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, ones that started themselves as a film series. So that's definitely cool to see. Yeah, I totally forgot about that upcoming Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Okay. So
There's a lot. And a lot of continuations, just not of superhero ones.
Prequels too.
Yeah.
We're getting a Strangers Chapter 1, which people may not remember the Strangers. I think it came out in 08, 09. And it was, if I remember correctly, Scott Speedman and Liv Tyler as a couple who are trapped in a house as they're being home invaded by weirdos in masks.
So I actually remember seeing that one in theaters and really, really loving it. I had no idea it was popular and that there will be a continuation. So
this isn't it's a chapter one. It's a prequel.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I just didn't know there was any after it. It seems there was a sequel too, so I missed that.
There was a sequel, and I think
of prequels quite wise. for that. I think the sequel should have just been a prequel, because like the first one does leave so many questions, and it's the kind of film, you know, you want those darn answers.
You know what's interesting is I think, if I remember,
Quiet Place has a prequel upcoming as well. It's going to be a real prequel year.
Yes, it is going to be a prequel year.
But it's also a real daughter of director year, because we got the guy who made Cronenberg, we have his daughter.
Yes.
And then we also have Shyamalan's daughter. Yes. And then I think we have a third one. I forget who, but it's a lot of daughters. I'm curious to see how they'll do.
It's kind of a big nepo.
We've had our son years. Time for the daughters.
It's kind of a nepo baby summer, and maybe we'll get into that. Well, let's get into it. We've chosen three movies to keep an eye on as we're going into summer here. I have three. Peter has three, so we may have as many as six by the end of this. So we're going to go through each of them one at a time, and we're going to start with Peter's number one movie to watch this coming summer.
Okay, so technically this had a late release in 2023, but it'll get a wide one when it comes to theaters, late May. And when it comes to streaming, June 7th, 2024, this film is Hitman by my favorite director, Richard Linklater.
Uh-huh.
And what's really fun about this is a lot of films are coming in the summer and you're like, oh, will it be bad? Will it be good? But this has been out for so long at Venice. It's got critical acclaim. I don't got to worry about that. I know that it's good. You know what I mean? I know it's good. That always feels nice. It can be good as a critic going in and having like a completely neutral point of view, but this will be a fun viewing of my favorite director. I'm okay to already know that it's gotten acclaim. And it's also his first one that stars Glenn Powell as the lead. Glenn Powell is a heavy role in Everybody Wants Some, but he's not the lead. It'll be really great to see that, because he's good in that. Everybody Wants Some. Also very good in Apollo 11 and a half, I think. Yeah, Apollo 11 and a half. So it'll be nice to see him become a real like official Linklater regular as the lead. Other than him, though, I'm not too aware of the other actors. So it's always really nice to see some, to learn some new about some new actors, some people that you could enjoy that could end up becoming my favorite. The co-star, Austin Emilio, most famous for Walking Dead. I don't like Walking Dead. So, you know, it'll be nice to kind of maybe enjoy him, but it'd be from something external. And I have heard of Retta. Retta is a really great actress in Parks and Rec. So that'll be a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think with her and Glenn Powell, it is going to be, a romantic action comedy. So it's going to have some laughs. And action comedies, whenever they get critical acclaim, I'm always like, what is this film going to be like? You know, it's not usually the case. Usually don't worry about that. So when it's just like a basic action and it gets that acclaim, you know, is there some specialty to it? Like, what's so great about it? So I'm excited to find that out. And it's, I think his first in a bit, his last few weren't set in Houston. So it's going to have a real true Linklater feel to it, like his original and where he's from, you know. It'd be like Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson, I don't know if he's ever set it there. Bottle Rocket, I think, was set there. So that'd be cool for him to go back. I'm glad that Linklater's doing that. I'm excited to see if the Houston scene will really be present in the film.
I can't remember the last time Wes Anderson set a movie at a real place.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He's not a good example, but Linklater, like suburbia and everything, you know, are set there. I think Slackers, so good on him.
Yeah, no,
I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, me too. And I actually forgot about Hitman. I feel so bad now.
Well, it came out last year. It did like great, but then hush hush until the Netflix release, which isn't until June. So they won't do, probably May we'll start getting like the more, heavy promotion for it on Netflix.
But you know, what's crazy is I'm seeing that Jerry Seinfeld Pop-Tart movie being advertised all over the frickin' place.
But that's just Jerry Seinfeld's way. You know, they also are maybe less worried about it because there's been so many Linklater originals on Netflix that like they probably know that it gets consistent views and like they're not expecting, you know. I think for the Pop-Tart one, they're hoping for like, they don't care about the reviews. They're hoping for it to be, you know, like top one on Netflix movies for a couple weeks or something.
Yeah.
You know, like I love Sandler, but like one of Sandler's like straight to Netflix releases, like it's just for views, you know?
I guess we'll see. I think it is going to be a Glenn Powell summer, which is why I went with this other Glenn Powell movie for one of my picks. And I kind of feel terrible for picking it, but it's you know what, I'm really interested to see what this is going to look like. It's Twisters with an S, which is a sequel to the 1996 hit Twister without the S.
I didn't know that. I thought it was just that explains why I would try to find it on Wikipedia. It would always take me to the old one. That's cool. A different title.
Yeah, so it's Twisters. It is a sequel. I don't know how much of it, like if it's gonna have like characters who appeared in the original movie. I mean, Bill Paxton passed away, unfortunately. Philip Seymour Hoffman's passed away. Carrie Elwes's character is killed in that movie. Spoiler alert for Twisters. But this one has Daisy Edgar Jones. It has Glenn Powell. It has Anthony Ramos, Maura Tierney, Brandon Perea, who people will remember as Angel from Nope. It has Daryl McCormick, who was Leo Grande in Thank You, Leo Grande. Was it? What was it? Hold on, let me look. What was it? This is great radio. Good luck to you, Leo Grande. So he was the Leo Grande in that. So it's Katie O'Brien too, who we recently saw in Love Lies Bleeding. So it's a great cast. The director is Lee Isaac Chung, who Oscar nominated for Minari. So he goes from Minari to Twisters, which I'm not sure if it's a lateral move or a step up, but Mark L. Smith wrote the screenplay. So he wrote Revenant and Overlord and the last couple of George Clooney movies. So this is not a talentless affair. These are game day players, all of them. And it's produced by Frank Marshall. So this could very well be, and I don't want to like set the bar too high, it could be at the Top Gun Maverick for this summer, where everyone's going in going, can you believe they're making a sequel to some movie from like 30 years ago, and like we're just supposed to go see it like schmucks, like why are they? And then everybody goes in and is like, oh my, Twisters, it's the movie of summer. So I don't know if that's gonna happen, but I hope so. The trailer was not, it didn't exactly sell it, but it made me intrigued.
It did for me too. I think something really great about it is the incorporation of how like they're trying to film it, because that is such a huge thing on YouTube right now, that it's really contemporary in those matters.
Yes, that is something I clocked as well. Also, just like Glenn Powell, who's like become like such a great leading man talent, if like Anyone But You. This guy is going places, and this may be another box that he's checking along the way as to full-fledged movie star status. He's got the looks, he's got the charisma, he seems to be making smart decisions, so I'm pulling for him. I like Daisy Edgar Jones a lot, so I'm pulling for her, that she's going to be the Helen Hunt in this. And I'm cautiously optimistic, let's say, about Twisters.
Yeah, that for me, the only, actually, she's pretty far down, so I don't know if it'll be that big a deal. I thought she was maybe the co-star. Daisy Edgar Jones is amazing. Kiernan Shipka's in it. She's not great. She's not a great actress. I've seen enough of her work. She's really, really her. The one scene in Mad Men, especially later, it's one of the, when she like claps the hands against her face, as like, she is who she is, you know. So I'm glad Daisy Edgar Jones is the one who will be the head.
She's great on the list. It may be. I mean, that was a stacked cast in the original too. Like we have Philip Seymour Hoffman, Alan Ruck, Joey Slotnick, what's his name, Jeremy Davies. Like, go back and look at that Twister movie, and like all these completely like, at the time, randos, but now like people who have had like long careers in the business just hanging out watching Twister.
You think in this Twisters there will be a reference to the first Twister release when the like actual tornado hit the one movie theater? Or do you think that'll be
good question?
Do you think that'll be too far. Maybe I'm just curious if there'll be a scene where like a movie theater you see kind of. I don't know.
It'd be weird if it was another movie theater playing a Kubrick movie. If it's like playing Barry Lyndon at the drive.
Yeah, just something completely disattached to Twitter. Yeah, that'd be funny.
All right, let's get to your number two then.
Yeah, so for me, and it's one that was supposed to come out a while ago, it just kept getting kind of not passed around more. I think it was an actual competition of just who's going to give it more money. Mm-hmm. The upcoming film, it's a major release, June 21st, 2024, is Jeff Nichols' The Bike Riders. Mm-hmm. So I personally am a huge Austin Butler fan. Elvis is just outstanding. You know, I'll watch that guy in anything. Growing up, you know, Zoe 101, he's like, you know, he's the true love interest, screw all the others. So I'm just really excited to see him in this, you know, something kind of completely separate from Elvis and from his work prior. Like, you know, for me, Zoe 101, he's just going to be like a regular kind of just roughy dude doing some crime. Mm-hmm. I worry a pinch that like the plot will be kind of narrow. It's just they become a biker club, and then the club leads to, you know, like a gang like the Hells Angels or something like that. But at the same time, even though that's like discussed a lot, and there's been some films and some works by Thompson, like Gonzo, that does deal with the biker gang of the countercultural 60s, as this does. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been that many non-documentary films about that topic. So this film could do good. I have a bit of worry, but I think the film could do good. At the very least, I think it'll be an amazing action film, like Austin Butler. But then we've got, you know, Tom Hardy. I'm not a huge Tom Hardy guy, but when it comes to action, like he's outstanding. And the same goes for like I Hate Walking Dead, Norman Reedus, though. If it's action, like come on now, it's gonna be great.
Well, if you're having a motorcycle movie, you gotta have him in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I think I haven't watched it, but I think I'm Walking Dead, that's like one of the shticks too. So
yeah,
that'll be fun. And yeah, like they're the main four, and then Jodie Comer, who is, you know, also outstanding. I haven't seen her and oh my gosh, of course I have. Killing Eve. She is outstanding in that. Honestly, if she's like the exact same as in Killing Eve, where she's like twisted, then that'll be fun.
Last School too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the fact that it's Jodie Comer as the lead will maybe kind of take away some worries that these real heavy action, violent films can get, you know, it's not going to be sexist, hopefully. I'm glad Kathy will be there. But yeah, it's also based on, like I said, Gonzo and other works. You know, there's like a lot of amazing collections of photographs from the biker countercultural revolution era of the 60s, and this is based on one of those. Yeah, I think it'll be really great, at least visually, and when it comes to just a quick historical mention of countercultural revolutions. Yeah. And of course it's gonna have some Austin Butler, so let's give it a catch. Yeah,
yeah, this is gonna be a real test for him, I think, because he's another one who's kind of much like Glenn Powell, Zendaya, someone who's like on the cusp of, you know, movie stardom. Like movie the test of the transition, like looking full movie star, is can you open a movie without the, you know, being in a franchise like Dune, or without you know, being in an, like playing Elvis in an Elvis movie, which, you know, when you're playing Elvis is the star, even if, you know, Elvis is
At the same time, I agree with you, but I mean, Bob Marley One Love didn't help Ben Stiller, right? So well, I don't know if it's
Bob Marley is an Elvis. Bob Marley,
he's quite famous.
He is to some people, but Bob Marley maybe not have the cultural penetration of Elvis.
I don't know if we're talking about Texas, man. I don't know if I agree with that or not. Okay. Talking global, London. I mean, Bob Marley. But you can have different points of views.
All right. Well, Bike Riders was on my list too. I mean, Jeff Nichols, I don't think he's ever made a bad movie. Take Shelter, Midnight Special, Mud, Loving. This guy is like a real film talent that's kind of unfortunately under the radar. I do have faith that Bike Riders is going to be something special, that it takes place over a 10-year period as you watch this biker gang start as like a club and descend into this, just, you know, where's the fine line between rebellion and criminality, and My only point of concern is like Tom Hardy and Jodie Comer doing like these Midwesty accents. When you watch the trailer, or you know, especially
and
Tom
they're
Hardy.
Meh.
I mean, Tom Hardy's like doing this, like I'm an American. Listen to me talk like an American, which
I didn't even know he wasn't. I thought he was American. I don't know much about him at all. I don't like him.
Really?
Yeah, that's interesting.
He's English.
Yeah, good on him.
I think he's English.
Well,
where was he born? Hold on.
Yeah, he's London.
Born in London, London town. Mm. And Jodie Comer's English too, of course.
I'm aware of her work because it's okay. A fucking quality.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so I'm gonna move on to one of the other films I have here, which is speaking of Mr. Shyamalan and his growing the family he is supporting with his name, Trap, which is stars Josh Hartnett, and he is a girl dad who is taking his teenage daughter to see Lady Raven, who is kind of coded as a Rihanna, Taylor Swift, like big young female solo talent. And they go to this stadium where the concert is taking place, and he excuses himself to go to the washroom while the concert is going, and he sees all this police presence. And he asks one of the vendors, he's like, "Hey, dude, what's going on?" And the vendor says, "Oh, you know that serial killer called the Butcher that has been terrorizing our city? The police know that he's here tonight, so they've laid a trap." And then you see Josh Hartnett go into the bathroom stall, open his phone, and you see that he has somebody trapped in the basement at home. Now, what I find interesting is the implication is that Josh Hartnett is the Butcher, and the movie is all about how he is going to escape this scenario. But what if Justin or Josh Hartnett is not the Butcher? And what if the guy he has tied up is the Butcher? You see, people think that they've got this movie figured out, and this is where Shyamalan gets you, is you think you got the movie figured out, but maybe it's not that. Maybe it's something entirely different. So this trailer, you think it spoils something, but I'm not 100% sure it does. So I'll be very interested to see, like, everything that you see in the trailer, is that like the first 20 minutes in the first 20 minutes of the film? Is that like all set up for what is the film? And well, I guess we'll find out. I mentioned it's a nepo affair because one of Shyamalan's daughters, Celica, plays the Lady Raven, the singer in the film. And of course, you mentioned his other daughter, Ishana Shyamalan, is directing The Watchers. 23 years old and directing a big studio release. You got to admire. You gotta admire the chutzpah. I mean, you can talk
yeah,
all you want
be
about
a lot
nepo
of,
babies.
It'd be a lot of work. It'd be a lot of work for sure.
It's a lot of pressure, especially when we're working with like Dakota Fanning, and The Watcher looks interesting too. I watched a trailer for The Watchers. It didn't make my list, but I did find it intriguing. I'd be very interested to see where that goes. But I'm gonna go with OG Shyamalan, which is Trap. Josh Hartnett, he's back. Let's keep him on top. Let's keep that Oppenheimer energy going. It's nice to have Josh Hartnett. Although he didn't really go anywhere. He's like on Penny Dreadful and he was doing smaller roles, but
yeah, but he's back on that big screen, which is always
back.
Nice.
Yes, let's you know, Josh Hartnett is back. He's where he belongs, on the big screen with girl dad energy, maybe some serial killer energy. We'll see what happens when Trapped comes out. I want to say it's in August the 9th, which is a good spot for something like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we still have to do your number three.
All right, number three for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is the long-awaited upcoming Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. So first thing I want to say is it is supposed to come out July 3rd on 2024. But they've been talking about this film for like 7 years, and it like just they kept getting pushed and pushed, and they say it's on Netflix now, but it's made solely by Paramount, so I bet they're going to change it. It's going to be on Paramount Plus or something, and it'll get pushed again. I don't know, but I'm just done with it, but it better come out. It's supposed to come out this summer, and I'm very excited for it. I don't expect it to be of a high quality. I think it'll be like Coming to America, just focused on just for comedy. And, you know, I'm hoping for some laughs. I really love the, what is there, three now? Three? I love the first three. In particular, the first one I watched over and over. Axel F is one of the best soundtracks, like one of the best soul score songs, at least for me. It's outstanding. Even, you know, the Crazy Frog, it's such a great song. Even Crazy Frog did a cover, you know what I mean? But it's been a while since I've seen, you know, I think the last one for me, Coming to America, his most recent have been more kids film. So it'd be nice to see some comedic Eddie Murphy, some adult comedic Eddie Murphy. But also, Judge Reinhold's going to be in it. And he hasn't been like existent really since the 80s, but he was so much fun in the 80s and 90s, you know, Gremlins and Home Alone, or not Home Alone, sorry, Santa Claus. He's amazing in Santa Claus. And he was not allowed in the Santa Clauses, so that disappointed me. So it'll be nice to see him in the Beverly Hills. He literally just comes up on TMZ when he's caught drinking and driving. It's a shtick, so it'll be just good to see him acting and maybe a bit, you know, doing a bit better. So I've got a lot of expectations for Axel F, but I think, you know, even with just the music, it'll be a kind of remix of it, a new kind of rendition of it. That'll be fun. Eddie Murphy, I'll be getting some laughs, and just seeing Judge Reinhold's face on something that isn't like a warrant or you know, just a bad photo. That'll be nice, you know? So yeah.
I have
Beverly Hills 4, Axel F.
I have zero expectation for Axel F. I'm zero. And I'm not someone who hates Beverly Hills Cop 3. I think it's fine.
It's just been so long, and it's talked about somewhat, but like not just, to an extensive amount.
It just smells so desperate. I mean, you know, at least Coming to America feels like, okay, we're catching up with this guy 30 years later. He's got a grown child. I think there was like supposed to be a time when like wasn't it supposed to be about like Axel Foley and his son, or like it's his son that's a Beverly Hills Cop now?
I didn't really talk at all about the plot. It's about his daughter. His daughter's in trouble. So he comes back and befriends her ex-boyfriend, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they like fight together for his daughter.
Tell me if Joseph Gordon-Levitt's playing guitar in that movie, and maybe I'll
be a little interested.
Maybe I'll get a little more interested if it's like bearded dad bod Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing guitar.
Well, it's one of those things, it's the director's first film, so like we've got no background to look at either, you know.
It just smells like a sequel, because John Ashton's coming back, Paul Reiser's coming back, Bronson Pinchot's
Judge
coming
Reinhold.
Back. Judge Reinhold's coming back. All right, we'll see what happens. In the event we did have some crossover, I came up with some.
I had Twisters too, so I had to quickly switched.
Okay, well there you go. Maxine, the third part of the Ty West trilogy about Max and Pearl. So this takes place in the 80s, against the backdrop of the Night Stalker and the porn industry there, and you know, 80s excess. So that looks like it could be a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first two were outstanding.
Yes, I agree.
The plot of this one looks great.
I had Furiosa on my list too. I mean, I was 100% sure going into Fury Road I was going to take that, and I really dug that. So like, it feels like the expectations are high for Furiosa, and I don't want to like get ahead of my skis on it. Inside Out 2 is coming out this summer. That's another one where I like Pixar. Although I did watch Elemental when I was at my sister's house, and it wasn't terrible.
No, it was pretty good. It's nothing special, I guess, but it's better than I expected too. It was pretty good.
It's just one of those things where I think the death of Pixar has been like overpronounced.
Absolutely. Still some great works. It's just Lightyear really messed them up for a bit when it comes to the reception. But yeah, I think they'll come back. I think Insight 2, I think, you know, Amy Poehler, part of it, she cares a lot about the quality. And I think it'll be good. I also, like, I've seen the trailer trailer for it, and the additions they add to like the thoughts you get and the changes for puberty, I think, are really smart. And you know, I'm jealous of all the kids who will be watching it as they go through that puberty.
That's like the first one was very, very smartly made, so I can't imagine they'd suddenly wake up dumb on this. I'm not a big rom-com guy, but like Fly Me to the Moon, which is like Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum, and it's set against the space race in the 1960s. Greg Berlanti is the director, and he's mostly well known now for like the making the Arrowverse shows, but I mean, he got his start on Dawson's Creek and those like teen-ish shows and like Everwood and all that. So if he can't make a good rom-com with two like incredibly magnetic and charming people like Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum, there's no hope for any of us. And maybe to wrap things up, I watched the trailer for this and I'm not 100% sure what's going on, but Horizon, an American Saga, written and directed by Kevin Costner, which
really, oh, okay, that seems interesting.
It's like
I remember seeing it on a list, and with the colon like that and like a dash for part one, I thought it was like a Chinese film or something.
No, it's part one is coming
such a long
out
title.
Part one's coming out at the end of June. Part two is coming out mid July. It's an epic western. Cast includes Kevin Costner, obviously, Sienna Miller, Sam Worthington, Giovanni Ribisi, Jenna Malone, Abby Lee, Michael Rooker, Danny Houston, Luke Wilson, Isabella Furman, Jeff Fahey, Will Patton, Jamie Campbell Bowers, Tim Guinea. Just like it's a cast of thousands. Like this is Kevin Costner, like taking all the cachet he has acquired through Yellowstone and putting it all on Red. And damn, if you like respect.
Yeah.
It's I can't believe it, but I'll be interested to see if you can still make like a big massive epic western that is just so like drippingly earnest in the year 2024, and you know, see what happens, because I like his Open Range a lot. His Open Range movie is really, really good. I thought
this won't be his first directed work.
Well, he did Dances with Wolves, Open Range, Postman.
Oh, okay, yeah, classics.
Why did he direct Wyatt Earp? I think he directed Wyatt Earp, and there's some discussion about how much of Waterworld and Robin Hood he directed, but anyway. We'll have to find out. Summer starts this Friday. Well, unofficially, of course. The movie Summer starts this Friday with The Fall Guy. That stars two very magnetic people, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. Our movie this week stars three magnetic people, at least one of them you'll know by name, and that name is probably Zendaya. But are we Zendaya curious enough about Challengers to get that?
Yeah, yes please, yes please.
All right, well, there we go. We'll get into more detail about Challengers following the break. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
To go. When my dad comes looking for me. I'll see you at school, Art.
Wait, are you on Facebook?
What?
He's asking for your number. And so am I.
You both want my number?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not a homewrecker.
We don't live together.
It's an open relationship.
Plus, Patrick has a girlfriend.
I do not. Hey, come hang out with us later. They put you up at the hotel in Flushing, right? We're in room 206.
Want me to come tuck you in?
No. We just keep talking about tennis.
Good night.
We have beer.
Okay.
Okay, that was a clip from Challengers. It's the new film from Luca Guadagnino, and it stars Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. And it is a non-linear romantic drama slash tennis movie about a I was gonna say it's about a three-way, but not quite. We never really get there. It is a love triangle of sorts. Interestingly, the screenwriter of this film, his name is Justin Kariczkis. Kariczkis, I think is how you say that. Justin Kariczkis, who is the partner of Celine Song, who wrote and directed Past Lives last year, which is another movie about another love triangle of sorts. So it's interesting that, you get these two movies with re released within a year of each other, or less than a year of each other, from two people who are in a marriage, about situations where you have people who have been married for a while and then somebody from the past comes back into the picture. So,
That's interesting. I wonder if there are merit, if anything of that nature's happened.
what's been going on in the Kuritsiki's slash song house lately? Yeah, so there's a lot going on. There's a lot of heat on this. It was Challengers was supposed to come out last fall. It got delayed because of the strikes. So we're getting it now. I think this is probably more of a summer-ish movie, spring summer movie, than it is like a fall winter movie. So I think
Oh,
that
absolutely. It's
worked out
tennis
well.
too, right? Like tennis
Yeah.
is such a summer sport.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it was actually perfect timing. If it had done an early release last year, it also would have intertwined in a weird way with Dune, probably Dune 2. So yeah, I'm absolutely okay that it was just released. And I thought too it would be coming like a just a streaming one because it's like Venice Film Festival, then a
Yeah.
streaming. Because Amazon did buy it, but
Yeah.
In theaters, like the big theaters, so that's good. And I know it came out number one this week, so
Yeah. I think it landed on where it was projected, like 15 million, which
not too shabby.
not too shabby given today's economic climate at the theater. And especially for for a movie that is not about like aliens or superheroes or
No, it's
monsters. Yeah.
rom-drom,
Rom
romantic
drum,
drama. Yeah.
rom 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 drum. Yeah,
Yep.
so I guess what do you have any special
Oh,
particular thoughts about Challengers?
I personally really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great film. I didn't even know until about halfway, well, not halfway, after I checked, who it was directed by. But I am a Luca Guadagnino fan. Guadagnino.
Guadagnino, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Call Me by Your Name. But Bones and All is like one of my favorite, probably my favorite non-comedic romantic film. It's just really special.
Yeah, it
And
is.
Challengers was, I don't love it as much as Bones and All, but like Bones and All and Call Me by Your Name, I would say objectively, yeah, great film. Just a really marvelous romantic one. I loved the main three, Zendaya and the other two dudes. They were great. Not actors I'm aware of, but just wonderful in it. Everything I expected from them, and the story was really interesting, simple, but really great. I'm also always impressed when it is not set in a linear way, but that intertwining actually ends up great and to make the structure and the final fight, if you want to call it, more grand. So
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I thought they did a good job. Again, it's like if you just this director has better films, but he's an outstanding director. So, this one just by itself is great. But I had trouble getting past whereas they're not eating each other. There's no cannibalism. How could it be true love, as Bones and All taught me, but it's still Challengers is a great film, especially if you are a Guadagnino fan. He's really remarkable. He's also himself, he's a gay man, so it's always great to eat. It doesn't matter in the film, they're gay, they're straight, or whatever. He knows romance as a whole. But I also think because he's a gay man, you can see more depth in some of these guys than a lot of straight directors would care about when it's more just, like a like back in the day, like Dukes of Hazzard, Jessica Simpson sort of thing. I don't think they're putting too much effort into the looks and the depth of Johnny Knoxville's character. He did a really good job in this. You know, you Patrick and Art both have you got enough qualities of them to really kind of decide who you're for, who you're against, and to really see the tension in the, like I said, the final match.
It's really interesting. There's something very archetypal about Art and Patrick in it. And I heard somebody remark like their names are kind of wrong. Like Art really seems more like a Patrick, and Patrick seems more like really more of like an Art. But but yeah, you know, you have Patrick who is you know, they both come from a privileged background, but Patrick leans into it. He's dedicated. He is, you know, willing to put in the work and do the thing to be the best tennis athlete he can be. And Patrick is, you know, kind of fly by the seat of his pants, and, you know, he loves the thrill. He loves, you know, winning. But, you know, he isn't, you know,
he's more of a rough individual too.
He's coasting on his talent. He's not really looking to hone his talent. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of this, as you find out, they both went to the same private school together, roommates, and they come up together and they're tennis partners. So you see them near the beginning of the film, and the 2006 portion, they win a doubles tournament. So they are partners, and in comes, and she says this, "Am I a homewrecker?" The Zendaya character, Tashi, who is another tennis player. She's incredibly successful in her own right as a single player. And of course they're immediately attracted to her. But there is this implication that, you know, she's the third person in this relationship.
They're besties, you know. Yeah. It's kind of sad how she kind of takes that away, you know. But that's the sadness you're supposed to feel from the film, the way they look at each other later in comparison to I think it's about a quarter of the way through, they do like the furthest flashback when they're in school and just playing tennis. And it's like, oh, a few years, Zendaya's going to come. Tashi will come. This will all be different for you, Patrick and Art. Enjoy this while you can, you know?
I know, it's so funny. And I guess this is kind of where Luca's influence is. It's just that it's very much, you can look at it and say it's about two men being in love with the same woman, but I think it's also about how a woman gets in between these two men.
Absolutely. And the solo scenes of those two guys really show that, like the sauna scene that like that. You get all that. That's a good one.
Which is so seductive. Even though it's like they're now competitors. This is on the cusp of their big final match. And the way that Patrick's like leaning over him without wearing a towel. And it's just, it's very seductive.
But what makes it even more is like when it comes to Patrick's character, he's bisexual, so you kind of wonder sometimes, like, is there a connection there? But yeah, it's fun. It's also too, it's like ancient Rome, even like two guys fighting over a girl there's something to it that does have a little bit of I enjoy him including that kind of gay theme into the fight between the two guys interested in the woman. It was fun.
I'm not sure they're gay. I think they're almost definitely like gay for each other. I think they were like on the cusp of sort of like understanding something about themselves until they go their separate ways, and Patrick goes pro, and Art goes to Stanford, which is also where Tashi ends up going to school. You know, if they'd sort of been allowed to, you know, who knows, you know, they could have very much realized like, hey, Art and Patrick, we're kind of in love and we're okay with, like, you know, it's very clear that there's more...
I don't know if Art's character was, but they definitely, there was like a camaraderie they had that was really beautiful. Well, maybe that was Guadagnino's what he was trying to get across, that hey guys, you don't need these Zendayas, man. You guys got each other, you know, you can find each other. Maybe.
Well, you know, it's what's interesting about the Tashi character is that there's a path for her where if she doesn't get hurt, she doesn't need either of them.
Like, she's stronger herself, including like in the tennis sport until the unfortunate injury.
Because there's a strong implication in it that she's like living vicariously through Art, who we discover early on that they are married, they have a child together. She's become his coach, and there's a very strong, because you see her doing like these managerial things. She's more than a coach; like she's kind of like the one that's guiding his career. And you have a very strong sense that she is kind of living through him, and he understands that that's what she's doing too, which is why he's kind of reticent. Like, he's ready to like give it up, but he knows like giving up tennis might mean giving up her as well.
Yeah,
and that's like
opposite of what I said. Like, you can also take it from like he's trying to say, oh, she would be better like without these guys, you know, like she would have her own life and everything. So I think that also shows like what's special about this film. There's a few kind of takeaways you can make, which is saying a lot for a romantic film.
Well, there's a strong inference, like, would she be better without these guys, because she gets into a fight with Patrick before her injury. And it's like, you know, if she had gone to, it's in, there's so much of this that's kind of, it's not said explicitly, but it's there in the back of your head. Like, Guadagnino makes it clear that he wants you to think about this stuff. It's like, if she had not had a fight with Patrick, would she have been able to go through that match without injuring herself? And how much of injuring herself was maybe, because she talks a lot about how tennis, like the idea of like experiencing the perfect tennis match. Like, she's talking about the match she has with this one girl in the 2006 timeline, how they were playing tennis for like 5 minutes, and that's when you see her like throw down a racket and scream come on, because it's like it broke, like the moment broke. They were playing tennis, they were like really they were the tennis, which is why it's interesting when you get to the end where the camera becomes the tennis racket, or the camera becomes the tennis ball, where it's like you're literally becoming tennis in these moments. And it's interesting to me, because I can't say that I give two farts about tennis, but it is interesting.
My parents love tennis, so I've caught some of it, but it's not like my go-to sport.
I think everybody's parents love tennis, but
yeah.
But it's,
I do respect it. It's like, because I've tried to play it myself and I can't. Like, I find it was more exercise for me than like hockey or even soccer or something. Yeah. It's you got to be really quick. You got to be really quick. And the tennis courts are bigger than they can seem. They're obviously smaller than like, you know, like a hockey, soccer field, but they're not small. They're big. It's a lot of running.
It's big when you have to move that fast, you know,
especially when you're not doing doubles, right? It's just you got both sides. So that's the other thing about this film. It wouldn't surprise me if Luca, the director, is a fan, because it was some great like sports footage. It was great shots of the tennis, a lot of real, you could really feel like the violence, you know, the anger in each hit. I thought it was really cool. And especially the last fight, or like the scene of the last fight. Obviously the last fight's kind of spread throughout. It has some really great, like, from the tennis point of view shots, and a lot of like guerrilla camera tactics, which I thought was really well done.
I did wonder how much of that archive footage. Well, no, it's like jarring, and obviously it's supposed to be jarring, and you know, really kind of getting you into the spirit of tennis. I did wonder though how much of that was trying to hide the fact that O'Connor and Feist weren't really like our actors playing tennis players, and not real tennis players, you know.
Yeah, true. What were your thoughts on the music? I didn't know it was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
And Atticus Ross doing this hard going house techno.
Perfect for tennis. I don't know if you liked it, but what it's almost exact, especially the first like big song and match, it's a lot like the one 2011 electronic artist Martin Solveig, and his shtick was tennis. He literally, all his music videos were tennis, his style was tennis. So like it really had not just the right genre, but the right portion of the genre, that the rhythms were very similar to that. It's just always been, tennis always been a huge part of like the Euro culture, including you know, dance and the electronic scene. But was even more abrasive and like good for the plot in this was, like you said, it was very like almost like harsh music too. which really worked. It added tension to the matches, but also like a good rhythm, so you're grooving along to it.
I hadn't thought about all that, but I'm glad that that's good context that, that you have, because what I found about it is I found it annoying at first.
Okay.
but as the movie goes along, I get more into it because they drop the hammer on that, on those beats when it's like, it's getting intense. And so when you hear it, when it just like cuts and it goes, you're just like, okay, something serious is going on. I'm on the edge of my seat. Okay. And now I'm paying attention, and it really gets you going, because otherwise,
and it is a part of the tennis culture too, which is really cool. They Atticus and Trent, put in a lot of good work to it. I would say maybe a pinch more than some of the other works they've done, which are great, but every once in a while they can kind of sound a bit similar. Whereas this, I wouldn't have even been to tell at first that it was Trent Reznor or Ross.
They were stretching. I mean, they were really stretching, and I think it is some of their best work, because it gives the film this like real propulsive feel, and it's so weird because it is a sports movie, and you know, your blood is supposed to get up in these sports movies because of the stakes, and it's usually like you have a winner or you have someone you want to win and you have someone who you want to lose in these things, and watching this, it's like, Art is, you know, the guy. Patrick is kind of a jerk, but he's one of those like charming jerks. He's like the guy who like will he will go out on a Tinder date with a woman so he can sleep with her, so he has somewhere to sleep, and then cuts out in the middle of the Tinder date to talk to his ex-girlfriend, then forgets his Tinder date is there, and she still like makes out with him and takes him home. Like that's the charm of Patrick.
That's but, like the first scene where you see the true Patrick. You see a really good structure of who Patrick is all around. You're not rooting for either, you know.
Either of them. You're kind of rooting for them both, you know. You're not 100% sure what to think about Tashi, because she seems to be like out on her own course. Like she's not even sure what she wants, I don't think.
No, she's not. Tennis first.
So it's like it's this sports movie where you have a bunch of people who you're not sure you like, you're not sure you're rooting for them. You might be rooting for them, you might not be. You're not sure if these people are rooting for themselves or the people who are like they're supposed to be their loved ones and lovers and friends. And this world of tennis, which is like for a lot of people kind of inaccessible because it's upper crusty. It's this challengers match that the film is set at is like New Rochelle, which is this upper crusty area of upstate New York where you know it's like a bedroom community for rich New Yorkers. So it's there's so much about it that's off-putting, but you get so drawn in because you're so focused on like the machinations of like who are these people, what do they really want, and how can people this hot and exciting be like this kind of bored with life?
And I think what's special about it too, like not all directors do this, is there was just some like random additions to the scenery and the scene plot that like aren't needed but like add a lot of character to it. For example, when she goes and, you know, has the with Patrick near the end, there's like tornadoes going on.
It's like
on,
a windstorm.
Right? And she's still going out just for that, you know? Yeah. It was presented, at least like they don't really mention it too much. So like vocally, it's subtle, not really part of the plot, but it still just makes what she's doing look even crazier. So there's just like sprinkles like that aren't needed, but just add more, you know, layers to the
it's so weird, and you know the movie is filled with like little details like that too, stuff going on in the corner. There's a scene in the bar where she's in the bar and she's watching the TV, and the girl she was playing in 2006 wins, and you can just sort of like see this idea on Zendaya's face, like if I hadn't like screwed up my knee, that woman would. there's little touches like that. So Challengers is an incredibly fun film, I think, very rewarding. We're seeing in the theater, like just feel, just like let the techno rock you, is
let it take over, join the ride,
enjoy the ride. That's right. So that's Challengers, and that's the end of this week's show. We hope you liked it. If you want to listen to us again, you can download every episode of this show every Friday from our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. We're on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can get us at your favorite app like Apple, TuneIn, and Spotify. And while you're on Spotify, you can find the playlist for all the music that you hear on End Credits. Just open up Spotify and search for End Credits on CFRU to find that playlist. You can stay connected to us on social media or on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show and on the Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back here on CFRU Thursday at 5 p.m. for news and politics on Open Source as Guelph with Scotty Hertz. And in the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. Or you can check out my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca, which leaves us with Peter, who will tell us where we can find him out there on the internet.
Mr. Towerack, good old YouTube and Twitter. That's it.
Good old YouTube and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and dare we say your summer music station, although it's only May, but hey, maybe we'll get that going. Anyway, this show End Credits will be back here next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for another new episode, and we will see you then.